the White House to the Vatican. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. President Trump on his way to Rome, or early tomorrow morning, he'll join world leaders at the funeral for Pope Francis.
He loved the world, actually, and he was just a good man. I met him twice. I thought he was a fantastic kind of a guy.
People are still paying their last respects in the third and final day of public viewing of the Pope and his casket.
Seeing the body and just remembering everything that he stood for is very important.
More than 100,000 people have viewed him so far. Before the president took off for Rome, he told reporters he's talked to China's leader numerous times, but would not comment if they've discussed reducing the high tariffs the U.S. and China are charging each other for imports while negotiations continue with other countries.
I think in the end we're going to end up with a lot of good deals, including tariff deals and trade deals. We're going to make our country rich.
Now, the president also said he thinks they're making progress trying to end Russia's war in Ukraine. It's President Volodymyr Zelensky is also going to be in Rome tomorrow attending the Pope's funeral.
Trump was asked whether he would meet with Zelensky. He says it's possible. The president also says he has no deadline for these Ukraine negotiations. He only wants a deal finished as fast as possible. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is in Moscow. The president says he and President Putin are already in meetings today. In the Oval Office yesterday, meeting with Norway's prime minister, the president refused to say what happens if talks fail, whether the U.S. will sanction Russia or revoke support for Ukraine.
Fox's Rich Edson at the White House. George Santos has just arrived in a New York courtroom where the Republican former congressman will be sentenced after Santos left the House in disgrace last year. Just the sixth member ever expelled in scandal. He faces up to 7 years in prison.
After pleading guilty to wire fraud and aggravated identity theft stemming from 23 charges for laundering campaign money and misleading voters, prosecutors accused Santos of lying to Congress about his wealth and using campaign donations for lavish trips and clothing.
That's Fox's Ryan Schmelz. America's listening to Fox News.
All of us need to be prepared to defend ourselves and our families, and we need to start with the less lethal option to avoid the legal complications associated with firearms. Byrner has their less lethal pistol launcher. It is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition. It is designed to incapacitate any attacker for up to 40 minutes. Go to their website, byrna.com/Hannity right now. You'll get 10% off. Let me tell you this Byrner story. Bob was at home. An intruder physically forced his way inside. Now, luckily, Bob had just received his Byrner 4 days prior to this incident, and he used it to get the man outside and off of his property. Byrner, it's legal in all 50 states. There's no background check needed. It can be shipped directly to your door. Now, see the powerful technology that is Byrner. Go to their website, byrna.com/Hannity right now. You'll get 10% off. That's byrna.com/Hannity.
A very good Friday to you all from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Scott Gross. Arizona is taking action to stop fentanyl traffickers. This week, Governor Katie Hobbs signed House Bill 2607 into law, targeting people caught with 200 grams or more of fentanyl in a vehicle with the intent to sell. Now, with this bill, traffickers will now face at least 5 years in prison with the possibility of up to 15. Repeat offenders will get an extra 5 years. And the Lemon Grove's Duck Drop Raffle will support the Yuma Child Burn Survivors Foundation this month. The foundation provides funding, transportation, and counseling to young burn survivors and their families. To enter, you can buy a duck for $20. The winner will be announced at the end of the month. To learn how to enter, find this story on our website at kyma.com. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all of your local news, weather, and sports. I'm Scott Gross.
Beautiful night tonight, clear skies and 62, the overnight low. Sunny and 88 tomorrow, 55 tomorrow night, and a great weekend coming. A little bit breezy on Saturday and Sunday, and the temps drop back a little bit, but 79 with sunshine Saturday. Sunny at 76 on Sunday.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Good morning, Yuma Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Egeberg, branch manager with Mortgage One. Also in studio, Russ Clark. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
You're not really going to like get me with Van Halen jumping into a Friday, are you? Come on.
I knew you.
But I appreciate you actually pulling something else out other than the norm. So nice job on that.
I'm kind of abnormal today.
Wasn't that young Frankenstein, Abby Normal?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was.
So you define the Abby Normal brain, I'm sure.
I resemble that.
And you know, there's about 500 people laughing right now remembering that movie thinking, yeah, that is Russ Clark.
It's a great movie.
So, you know, let's talk about some things that are coming up. And, you know, what's the old saying? The only thing constant is change. Now, We've had so many moving pieces in the economy, in the mortgage market, and you hear people talking about mortgage changes, credit changes. Oh, my gosh, what's going to happen with inflation? What's going to happen with the economy? Isn't it always changing, though?
Oh, yes. And, you know, but there are trends and there are things that we're used to. But you know, the landscape changed. So what happened in the past will only happen again if the same situation. And like the mortgage crash happened because of certain things lined up. Mm-hmm. And people look at this and say, well, we're so escalated, it's going to be another mortgage crash. Well, we don't have the exact same situation.
No,
it's not the same.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. However, let's talk about that, though. When people are really nervous, and as a individual consumer, not an economist, not somebody who's looking at huge pictures to invest, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, what is the individual guy or gal really looking for?
Security.
Safety and security.
Yeah.
And that's it. And they're just trying to make really good decisions.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, you go back down that road and the old saying, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. It's literally that. Are you looking at a budget? Do you have a little bit of confidence in your own earning ability? And do you need to live somewhere? And it's amazing how many first-time buyers come into me almost paralyzed with fear that they don't know if this is a good time to buy and they don't know should they get a mortgage. And my two thoughts are, well, number one, you don't have the $300,000 cash to buy a house, so you have to get a mortgage. You know, that's the only other way. But when you say you don't know if it's a good time to buy, are you worried about your job? Are you worried about your income? Because if you don't buy the home, then you're going to rent somebody else's home and you still have a payment.
But don't you make better decisions when you're paralyzed with fear?
I don't necessarily make better decisions, but I will tell you that I've learned to use the fear as a motivator to go do way more research. Let's just make sure that I'm tactically looking at things, not emotional. And, you know, like if I'm looking at whether it's a house or an investment or something, you kind of go, ooh, this feels weird. I wonder why this feels weird. And then you can say, no, that's fake. That's not a big deal.
Paralyzed with fear is emotional, and it usually makes bad decisions. You know, because you stop looking logically at that point.
And that's where, you know, you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. You bought a new piece of equipment.
A couple pieces, yeah.
And it was a huge check. Okay. How did you process that? Because you could have gotten by with your old equipment, right?
Here's how I process it. And I sit down with the business people in you know, Chris, and ask him the questions. How much money do we generate on the old piece of equipment? How much faster will the new piece of equipment be? How much more business can you generate on it per week or per day on average? And will that generation of funds more than pay for the lease? And it's a lease to own type deal. I didn't just write a check. It was a lease to own. And the answer is we'll probably receive four times the income as what it cost us for the lease payment.
So now, just sideline, because when you started saying that, do you remember the old like tongue twister, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck?
Yeah.
That's literally what I was hearing you say when you were saying how much more revenue.
Yeah. Well, and I want to...
That's not trying to be joking, but that's the way it's tactical.
It is tactical. And a lot of times, you know, particularly mechanics, and you know, the mechanics, they don't buy the equipment that gets the job done. They want a beautiful, shiny box, and they want, you know, envious equipment that people will look at and say, wow, that's beautiful wrench set or something and all that. And they pay top dollar to get brand name shiny. I don't care, really. What will it create in revenue? And so you see some of these mechanics will have $60,000, $70,000 tied up in a toolbox.
Wow.
$67. And you could do the same job for a few hundred dollars.
That's a lot.
But they buy tons of specialized equipment. And see, specialized stuff I'll buy and I'll keep in the shops. Maybe will you use it once a month, use it once every 6 months or something. I'll buy that. You don't need to. They don't care.
So emotional versus tactical
decisions. It's emotional.
Decisions.
I do tactical.
And that's literally the first-time buyer conversation is, okay, let's just stop for a second. Do you need to live somewhere?
Yeah.
And the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
And then do you really want to live with mom and dad, grandma and grandpa for the next 50 years?
Not from my mom and dad and grandma and grandma.
So at some point, you're going to have to pay somebody something. And I know this sounds so, like, you know, just
obvious.
Grade schooler-ish.
Is that what it is? Obvious, yeah.
But, you know, when you say, is now a good time to buy, do you need to have a roof over your head, and are you obligated to pay for one? And if the answer to both of those are yes, then it's a great time to buy.
And if you're living with your parents and you love it, stay. Yeah. By all means, save, man.
And, you know, you start talking about some of those things because you say, well, wait a minute. What you're also saying is you're trying to time the market. And anybody who invests in stocks, does anybody time the market really, really well? Very few. And yes, there's some people that can read.
Some key professionals that have staffs of people that understand it. But
yeah. You and I don't. And you listen to almost everybody that says, well, it's, you know, it's the dollar cost averaging. You just keep putting money in and you just play the game for the long term. You do the same thing with the house. Look, if home values, and they're not going to, but let's pretend home values went down 5%.
Okay.
And you had already bought. Are you going to feel like you lost out? No, because unless you're going to sell, you don't know and you don't care.
Look, if the moment that you bought that house, it was the right deal, it fit you, it doesn't matter whether it goes up or down next month, you made the right choice.
Correct.
At that moment. Stick with it and ride it through, and you're going to get the results you think you're going to get.
And everybody has the chance to refinance later if interest rates went down. So you have the ability to change things if it's not the right time that
way.
But you know what's really interesting to me is everybody who asks those questions, those weird ones, what are they driving? A car.
Something I can't afford.
Okay, but are they driving a car, and does it go up or down in value, Russ Clark?
Down, generally. I mean, rarely.
Wait, you're saying so everybody who buys a car, they go down in value, but we have no problem emotionally going and buying cars, but we're questioning whether it's the right time to buy a house.
It's a depreciating asset.
How many boats and razors and side-by-sides go up in value?
Nearly none.
Okay. So we buy those because of the emotional need. You go buy a brand new, amazing 85-inch big screen TV. Are those going up in value?
No.
So literally everything else we buy, we just commonsensically say, it's going to go down in value. I've wasted money because it's not worth what I paid for it. And historically, do homes go up or down over time?
Oh, up.
Huh. So we have planted the fear in people to say, oh my gosh, is this the right time to buy, when everything else we buy goes down in value, and the one thing you're concerned about is the one thing that actually could go up
but
in value.
But they don't tie it to what you started off with, is that you're gonna write a check every month to live somewhere.
Yes.
And if you're doing it to where it's just rental or something, because you're waiting for that right time to jump into the game of Frogger, you're missing the understanding, and you spend 3, 4, 5 years renting.
Yeah,
that those days are gone, and you can always look back and say, "Wow, could have done better."
And I did. You know, I rented in an apartment for 5 years. And, you know, I was too stupid, didn't know the difference.
Is that where we're putting it, stupid?
I was too stupid. And we'll talk about my stupidity after this break. So it is the 8:15 on a gorgeous April 25th. This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. This is Derek Eggerberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace, offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we've been proudly serving the Yuma community since 2001. Your financial future deserves the personalized care and expertise that only a local, trusted advisor can provide. From retirement planning to wealth management, we're here to help you reach your goals with confidence. Investment Advisor Services, offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Ra ra ah ah ah, ra ma ra ma ma, ga ga ooh la la, what's your bad romance?
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU, Derek Eggerberg, Russ Clark talking mortgage credit and just how we need to help educate some of the wonderful people we have in this community that, you know what, we could build such a financially educated, amazing community if we just everybody, you know, what's the old saying? Each one teach one. Look, yeah. Most of the people who are listening to this station have kind of got it. And that's thanks to people willing to take the time to educate themselves or finding a mentor. And I was telling you off air, the couple that really got me thinking about this was about 10 o'clock yesterday and literally paralyzed with fear. And I was trying to figure out, are they just that? Is it a defensive mechanism that they're trying to make sure that they're not going to get taken advantage of? Or are they regurgitating mom, dad, uncle, aunt, news media, somebody's garbage that they've been filled with? Or are they just trying to say things like they're in control and they know, which they don't?
I think it's all defensive. They don't want to be taken advantage of by a professional. So they're letting the professional, I know what I'm doing. And you're not going to take advantage of me because I know I'm looking for the right rate, mm-hmm. You know, those kind of things. Yeah. And I understand it. I don't think most of us are much differently, you know, do much different. We should ask a lot of questions and I work in an industry that's confusing. You mean that most people can't figure out. Mm-hmm. You work in one that most people don't, mm-hmm. can't figure out. So you have to lean on the professional a little bit and ask some questions.
Here's the and. And if I go into you, I'm going to say things like, hey, Russ, I don't get this. This is what's going on. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Because I trust you. Mm-hmm. I allow people, come in, ask me questions. I don't care. There's no stupid question. You can ask the same question three times. But be vulnerable enough to ask the question. Don't say, I know this is not right. You know, wait, time out. You're not saying this correctly. Because again, the other thing, when we actually got them down the road, they clearly had some financial understanding.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you know, we don't even want a mortgage for a long period of time. Can we do a 10-year loan?
Sure.
You can, but boy, that would be the worst thing to do. And he goes, well, why is that? I said, well, because the payment's going to be much higher than a 30, and if you take the 10, now you're forced to make that payment.
Some people want to be forced.
Some people do, but do they have the cash flow to make that 10-year payment?
Some days.
They don't.
Yeah, right.
Their debt-to-income ratio won't support it.
If you run into a wall, you're...
And that's the, you know, look, what you're asking is, how do I become safer faster? And it really comes down to the word discipline.
Right. And you get the 30 and pay it off in 10 if you want.
If you really want to. I'm not going to talk you out of it.
But that gives you options.
Because you can always make the 30-year payment for a month or two when it comes around to Christmas time or kids' birthdays or what have you. But the discipline is I'd rather structure my debt and then use my extra cash to go do other things that I want. And let's be brutally honest. Most people hear, you know, hey, you're budgeting for your cash, and they feel like it's a handcuff, right? No. I feel like a budget is the most freeing thing ever because I know if my budget is taken care of, then I can do whatever else I want when I want. But here's the other thing. I'm not only budgeting the cash, the income, I budget the debt. You just talked about budgeting your debt. You bought a piece of equipment and you budgeted how that debt would generate additional revenue and pay for itself. So you have less or more fear having that piece of equipment in your shop.
Less fear because, you know, and I trust guys. I'm now when Chris told me he would do X amount more work.
More.
I think, you know, he's thinking on the aggressive side. So I'm mentally back down 30%, you know, but I mean, we're still good. We're still good.
But that's the point is you budgeted the debt in addition to your current income. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part is when this guy and gal are asking about, hey, let's do a 10-year, whoa, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get out of debt, but that's not what you're going to try to do because you're not going to live in this home for 30 years. Based on jobs and
history,
moving, they're not going to live in this. So why would you want to put your extra money in as opposed to saving your money somewhere else and put this home in a position that it could be a rental property later? Or if you don't want it as a rental property, at least you're going to get the cash out called equity, whether it's more or less, when you sell the property, right?
Right.
So if you paid an extra $100,000 in, let's just say, and you sold the home next year, how much do you get out? I don't know, because I don't know how much the home is worth.
That's right.
So it has nothing to do with anything other than the market per se. Wouldn't you rather have the debt and pay it slowly over time and budget your savings?
If you budget it out okay, you're fine. You know, on day one when you walk into the house, I can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not stressing me. I can do this plus make some savings and do the things in life I want to do if that's what's important to you.
Now, the line on my budget that everybody squirms for is 1% of value towards maintenance.
That's true, though.
Who else have you ever heard talk about that? Probably
not
nobody.
Enough.
Probably nobody. And even this month, so I came home, RO system not working. We have one of those pressurized pumps. So, again, pump went out.
Yep.
Okay. Got to put a new pump in. Walked out of the house this morning. You know how the AC units, they have the one drip line that goes somewhere in the home that you never see.
It always clogs.
But the overflow comes somewhere outside. You know, walked outside this morning and the overflow line is just running like a garden hose.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I've got maintenance stuff to do there, right? So
right.
I got those too. But wait a minute, I had already called the garage door company to come do the preventative maintenance on the garage door because I'd rather do the oiling and the greasing and the readjusting and confirming everything before something goes wrong. So now all of a sudden, this month, I've got three repair items that most people don't plan for.
Oh, right. Most
but
people
it
don't.
Needs to be budgeted for. Those things have to be in the budget.
Try losing an air conditioner, a refrigerator, a washer, a dryer, you know, whatever.
How do you lose one? I mean, do they just walk out?
No, lose one as far as functional.
Oh, you mean breaking.
Yeah.
Like, Russ, I know you're getting old, but if you lose a refrigerator, you are having some
issues.
Somebody
says they lost an engine in the car, I don't look under the hood for empty.
Okay.
I
guess your former pilot days, if you say lose an engine, that does have a different connotation.
It's still there. You just, it's not functioning.
Not doing well. Yeah. So again, these are the fun conversations, and it doesn't frustrate me, but it's interesting. I'm trying to be a mortgage professional and help people psychologically get through this because I really believe that every human being here in America should be able to retire a millionaire.
I would well, they can if they focus on that.
How hard is that?
Well, hard enough to where less than 5% of the people are going to do it.
And let's talk about it. Let's pretend you become a teacher. Let's say husband and wife are both teachers working, you know, again, nominal incomes. And when I say nominal incomes, because I see almost everybody's income, and a lot of teachers have huge student loans to get in. So big student loans, little incomes. But if you two teachers went and bought just a bread and butter townhouse, great. You're going to rent somewhere. You may as well buy this. 3 to 5 years later, do you think they're making a little bit more with their tenure at the school?
Sure.
Cool.
Generally.
Making a little bit more. You buy a slightly bigger home, turn the old one into a rental. 5 years later, do you think they're making a little bit more?
Generally. Yeah.
Cool. Buy a new home, turn the old one into a rental. 15, 20 years later, are they making a little bit more?
Yeah.
Okay, so if they bought four homes over a 20, 25-year working career, Russ, in your math brain, what's the average home worth?
300.
300. What's 3 times 4?
It's around 1,200. Well, 1,200,000.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you just figured out the secret formula that you could take two teachers over a 20, 25-year working career with little to no stress and have 1.2 million worth of properties. How long, let's pretend somebody became a teacher at age 22, mm-hmm. when are they going to stop working typically?
60, 65.
Social Security, okay, so let's say 65, 67. So let's say 45 years worth of working mostly.
Yeah.
If they started buying at year one or two, at 20 years in, they own the four properties, don't buy anything else, by 45 years in, haven't they basically paid everything off?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, so, particularly the first two, three.
Yeah, so now you could have 3 to 4 homes free and clear, 3 of them paying rent to you, plus your 2 teacher pensions. Mm-hmm. How could you not retire just the slow way to a million plus and be okay?
Yeah, you can.
That's, if there's a secret formula that every one of these first-time home buyers, and that's kind of what we went through, and one of the two was a teacher, that's what we went through. It's like, guys, what you're asking is to be safe and secure. And I'm just going to say there's no 100% safety. You got to take some risks. You're going to own a property. You're going to do these things. But this is such a simple thing to do if you just say, you know what? I'm willing to bet on myself. I don't need a lottery ticket. I don't need, you know, something random, although it would be nice. I'm just going to bet on myself, and I know that I can be more diligent with my finances than anybody else is going to be.
I've seen a lot of people start good savings programs and good asset management and good programs that sell them because, you know, we had enough money sitting there, we could buy a brand new Suburban for cash. So they'll get an $80,000 car for cash and give up on all their...
Ugh.
I've seen it, and I'm sure you have.
I have.
And they think, well, it just makes sense. That way I don't have a car payment. And that way, you know... We can still save more money or whatever. But
time value of money. If you told me that I was only going to get a 20% interest rate, mm-hmm. I probably would pay cash for that. Or if you told me that I could go new and some of the auto manufacturers were offering 1.9% interest and it was invested, let's say, with Tom and the guys over at Yuma Investment Group and I was making 4, why would I ever pull the money out? And again, it's that tactical, analytical portion that I have. This is fun for me, so I hope it doesn't come off sounding sarcastic, but this is the fun stuff just to kind of tweak people a little bit. And I know you guys do the same thing. You know, how many people go in and they're costing themselves money on their car because they don't keep the tires inflated, they don't change the oil frequently enough, they don't do a tune-up, and all of a sudden it costs them 25% more to run their car.
Yeah.
And that's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many people are driving around this community costing themselves 10 to 15% more to operate their vehicle because they don't do preventative maintenance?
Unfortunately, it could be more. You know, it depends. You know, you're shooting, you're throwing the dice. I see people that blow up engines and stuff and just unnecessarily. Frustrates Chris because, you know, if you'd have come in a couple months ago, it would have been a couple $100. Now it's like you need a new engine, you know. That ain't cheap.
And that ostrich head in the sand, how many people does that actually help? None. You just
but people don't know and they don't trust professionals. You know, you go in for a couple $100 in repairs and they say, well, it's going to be 1500 or two. You know, they're and how do you know whether they're telling you the truth or not telling you the truth?
You better have a personal referral from somebody you trust or build a relationship.
And that's the problem with industry. Not a lot of industries, not just automotive, but same with all of them. The investment
every
industries.
One of them. But again, now this young couple, they're moving into town. OK, Okay. So they didn't know a lot of people, and I get it, and that's where some of the trust comes from. But, you know, as we were talking, they're like, man, we're really hungry. Where would you go? All right, let's have a conversation. So,
food bank.
Nah, not for lunch. But, you know, hey, what are you hungry for? You know, I'm good friends with this person here. They own this restaurant. I'm good friends with this person here. They own that restaurant. Sure. Tell me what you're hungry for, and let's get you there. It's like, you know, is there anybody in town who has good beer? I'm like, you know what? You need to go see Chris Wheeler. He actually brews his own beer down at Prison Hill. Go down there and have a good conversation. And if you see him, he's probably the one sitting in the corner with his feet up in the chair doing absolutely nothing. But if you see Chris Wheeler, you know, tell him I said hi.
It's probably true.
It probably is. But that personal recommendation, where did they go for lunch? They went down there?
Yeah, with personal. I do that a lot. I'm going to go to a strange place, a strange town, town I don't know. Absolutely.
And isn't it funny? You'll take that simple, easy recommendation, but you build up all of this negative yuck when you're talking about the auto industry, the mortgage, the real estate. There's so much misinformation out there that's what we got to get through. And I need everybody's help. I need your help, Russ. We got to start talking to these people to say, look, we can become financially better off. We can educate ourselves to know how to make money and start building some safety and security. Nobody's ever going to be 100% safe and secure. However, we can build some safety and security because you're going to need a roof over your head. I mean, Russ, you talked about times when you were using your RV, right?
Yep.
Did you still have a roof over your head?
Yeah. It was an RV.
It doesn't matter. You still had a roof over your head, and that roof cost money, and there was parking and things like that, and you just organized things in a way that you still tactically handled the budget.
Yeah.
Don't care who you are. There is going to be a roof over your head. We've got to make better decisions on how to turn that into an investment. So it is 8:31. It is the bottom of the hour. This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we believe that knowledge is power. Since 2001, we've empowered the Yuma community with the financial insights and the strategies needed to achieve your dreams. Whether you're planning for retirement or managing your wealth, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Investment advisor services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is Derek Eggerberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace. Place offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626. Was it gorgeous out there this morning?
It really was good. It was nice.
This is the time of year to be outside.
And it needs to last like this all summer, but it won't.
It won't. I wish for that every year.
And I'm okay with it. It's what it is. Yeah. You know, I'm okay.
If it lasted like this all summer long, there'd be 5 million people living here.
I've been back riding my bike every day, except you don't see it today because my legs hurt so bad.
Well, then you can't say every day because today is a day, and so it's not every day.
Well, I started off every day. You know, like 3 or 4 days in a row.
How can your legs hurt if it's an e-assist bike?
I really pedal. It really is assist. It's not,
but it's if not, it's e-assist, you still could have ridden it today, and you wouldn't have had to do almost any pedaling.
I wouldn't feel right.
What is it? One to ten assist?
No, seven. 1 to 7.
Okay, so how much pedaling did you do at a 7?
The actual electric is 1 to 5. At 5, you do very little. The bike does the majority, mm-hmm. and at 1, you do the majority.
Okay.
You know, so it's all a gauge, but it's a 7-speed. Also, it's got gears, 7-speed.
Okay. So Friday next week, we'll see you on the bike.
Oh my gosh, yes! But no, it was the gym that did it to me, though. I was riding it hard. I've been riding my bike to the gym. I've been riding it home. I've been riding it to the shop. I'm riding it all over the place. I get to the gym and say, "Today's leg day." Whoops. I said, seriously? It's hard I've been riding? He says, yeah. So he said, I'll be easy on you. And he just put 300 on the leg press. He said, give me 100 of them.
Whoops. How long did that take you?
I did it in four sets, 30, 30, 25, 20. And that's 105. But then I couldn't walk.
Did you look up at the ceiling so you don't have tech neck, or did you?
I looked up at the ceiling. He insists on it. That's my trainer. He always makes me look up.
Did you look down in the trash can as you threw up?
No, I didn't get sick. In fact, that didn't hurt me at all then. It was later that I started.
Don't admit that to your trainer.
No, don't admit that
because he's listening and he's going
to. He said, do 100. I asked him if he's crazy. He says, you can do it. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And I was kind of like not happy about it, but I did it.
Okay. So gorgeous day. So you rode home in pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So gorgeous day outside, lots of stuff to do, lots of stuff coming up. Again, river season, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how many of those boats depreciate?
100%.
Okay. That's the only thing going back, finishing the conversation that we had with the young couple. Everything else that you buy is going to depreciate. You know, the microphones that you and I are sitting in front of, they're not worth what they were when they were new. The computer monitors that you have here.
They have some residual values, but they're not gaining.
So as long as you're budgeting for what the payment is and some repair costs, you're fine. Right. So quit letting the news media convince you that there's issues, or quit letting mom, dad, uncle, brother, sister convince you that real estate is bad, when real estate generally, not 100%, but historically generally goes up over time. And if the interest rates are cyclical, which means sometimes they're high, sometimes they're low. It's not a perfect sine wave of any sort. But if interest rates, if you believe they're higher, would you believe they have the opportunity to come down later?
Oh, yeah. Cool. Generally, that's history that does that.
And if interest rates were in the twos and threes, which better not ever happen again, but if they're at that low, do you believe they would go up over time?
Oh, yeah, I mean, if it gets down there again, everybody should refinance and get in line.
But you know, if they're low, they're going to go up. If they're up, they're going to come down. Sure. At some point, that's just how the economy works.
But you should buy a house in all conditions. If you're living.
If you're living.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you still buy real estate when you're not living. It's just a much smaller section.
I knew you could vote if you're not living.
Now, let's talk about some of the people who have a hard time getting a loan. And when you're self-employed, what does your accountant, your CPA, your tax advisor typically try to do?
Keep you from making too much money.
Great. So you structure your taxes and you do business decisions that limit your taxable income. You bought a piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Did you all get to write that off?
Well, not all of it, but yeah, it does go. It goes into the write-off.
Well, you told me you leased it, so you get to write off 100% of that lease payment, correct?
Correct.
Cool. And if you had bought it, you would be able to write off the equipment that you purchased.
But we'd have to depreciate that over 10 years, that one would have been. But a lot of equipment we can depreciate the year we buy it if it's, let's say, $6,000.
So what you're telling me is you made a good decision that you leased it, so you get to write off 100% of the cost of that equipment as it's coming out of the bank.
Yeah, eventually it all gets written off anyway, but it's just a matter of the timing. You can only write off so much.
The reason I say that is most, not all, but most self-employed individuals have a really tough time getting home loans because their income is written off down to near zero and sometimes a negative, so they have losses carried over from year to year.
But I always paid myself a salary as a business owner, and that salary would get me a home loan.
In some cases, now let's pretend you paid yourself 50 grand a year salary and your company lost 50 grand.
That would not be good.
That's a net zero, and that's where you see a lot of people is the net is a zero. So, you know, one of the things that people don't understand is there are portfolio-style loans. There's things that you can do to help the self-employed individual. And we look at three main other things from a self-employed perspective. But it's amazing how many people don't know how to read tax returns and don't understand how businesses work. I had a gentleman come in that I've known for some time in the community, not well, but we know of each other, and had three different lenders, two local and one national, turn him down.
Yep.
Great. Sat down for about 30 minutes,
but
went through everything.
Smarter. Don't you look at cash flow at all or any of that stuff? I guess it doesn't matter if you're not making money or eventually cash flow.
Well, now you're
matter.
Saying two different things. So cash flow on the IRS tax return versus cash flow in the bank statements.
Yeah.
Two mutually exclusive things.
Yeah.
When you say income from the property, like let's pretend you're going to buy a rental property, Is there income from the property or is it income from your business? And so some of those things need to be separated, and you also get to look at assets. Let's pretend this individual had $1 million cash and they wanted to buy a $500,000 home. Do they have the assets to cover that? So
sure.
There's lots of creative things. And when I say creative, here's the rules. We have to prove the ability to repay in a way that we can stand up and say, yes, I did my due diligence and we're not putting this individual in harm's way. Most self-employed individuals don't. It's kind of like, have you ever gone into the fast food restaurant? And let's pretend, Russ, you were 500 pounds.
Okay.
And you went in and you said, hey, I want 10 quadruple cheeseburgers and 4 chocolate malts.
You got to keep that weight up.
Wouldn't you love the cashier to go, Russ, you're fat. You don't need that. You need a salad. You know, but most cashiers aren't going to go, dude, you're fat. You need a salad. They're going to process what they know.
I would think they lose their job, you know.
But they're going to process what they know. And unfortunately, most mortgage loan officers don't understand how to read tax returns. They don't understand how self-employed individuals work. They don't even understand most of the tax codes. And here's the funny thing. You know how few mortgage professionals own rental properties?
I don't imagine a lot of them do.
Isn't that interesting that a lot of the mortgage professionals and real estate agents sell or try to finance things, but they don't understand the tax rules. They don't understand how this income is going to be brought in.
They focus on the business at hand, and it is another business if you own a property. And some of people have that, you know, fear of, like, I don't want to make that leap and having a private business.
So this individual, there are 4 different ways, morally, ethically, legally compliant, to do this gentleman's home loan. It's just a matter of what makes the most sense for him. And guess what? 3 of the 4, it's just a yes or no. Is it green or red? It doesn't change the interest rate. It doesn't change how much he's putting down. Literally, here's how you do it. So we can get this done. Here's your pre-qualification. Go get it done. Guaranteed we're closing that home loan in 30 days. No problem. But why did 3 other companies convince this fairly well-off self-employed individual that, you know what, your tax returns suck, you make no money, and you're never going to get a mortgage? Because that's how that person felt after 3 different conversations, right?
Yeah.
Why does the professional not know enough to be able to coach this self-employed individual into a loan?
I think they're trying to get as many things closed as they can. They know what they know, and they're probably looking for a boutique type customer that walks in, like, I know how to do that, and let me take the easy ones. You take the business ones and the complex ones,
and that's,
I would assume.
And that's one of those things that really frustrates me about our industry is if I said to a rookie loan officer, tell me about a reverse mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them aren't going to have any idea what a reverse mortgage is or the criteria,
Isn't that in the entrance exam to get the license?
Maybe 3 questions.
Okay.
You know,
It's there, though.
You know, that's kind of like me saying, if I wanted to be an ASC certified mechanic for you, does that teach me everything I need to know, or does that give me just kind of a base grounding of, you know what a transmission is, you know what an engine is?
It's more than basic. I mean, there's going to be questions on there that I'd have to study for.
But is that going to teach me everything I need to know about everything?
But it's going to give you the ballpark to get into, at least, and a general understanding that you need to open up the book and look a little more.
So if I was driving a 1972 Jaguar XKE with the V12, would that ASC certification teach me what I need to know about that very specialized engine?
No. I mean, You're going to open the hood and look at it and know what the parts are and think, better check out the specs on that.
Right.
That's about it.
That's the point is a reverse mortgage, different product. Most people don't understand what it is. A construction loan. Is a construction loan different than a renovation loan, Russ?
Oh, yes.
Okay. 2 totally different animals, but people use them synonymously and they're not. You know, when you say HELOC versus a HELOAN.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. Well, one's a line of credit. One's a fixed rate mortgage as a second position. So I can go take out money, not touch somebody's first, but people are given HELOCs and HELOANs without knowing the difference between the two. The line of credit is you can draw against it and pay it back over 10 years and use it just like a credit card. The HE loan is you take all the money up front. It's fixed and structured just like a mortgage, and you make a payment. But once the money's paid in, you don't get to pull it back out. It's not like a unlimited checkbook. And so, again, people are selling products without necessarily knowing all of the advantages and disadvantages of them, like this self-employed individual. Man, I'm sorry you got told no three times. I'm kind of glad about it because you came in and we're going to help you. Yeah. But it's amazing how many people don't get it.
When you start working into that self-employed and you start working into the VA, you do have to. It's not the normal, what I can say the majority of the loans are going to be, which is just.
No.
So I can understand why a lot of people just, well, I don't want to work in those specialties. We'll let this guy do it. Let that guy do it because there's more to do.
And you should be a specialist in all of those.
Should be.
Again, you know, we live in Yuma County. Does almost every home in South County qualify for a USDA loan?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
And I think they're still doing it, but they almost lost that certification due to population or something. I can't remember what it was.
Well, they technically, if you read the guidelines and I have no dog in this fight, but if you read the guidelines, they should have lost it in the year 2000 based on the census tract. That can got kicked down the road, and then with the mortgage blow up in 07, 08, 09, they extended it in 2010. Then they didn't want to change anybody's borrowing ability in 2020. So the USDA loan is designed as a rural loan with limited population.
South County really doesn't qualify for that anymore. Nope. They would never qualify for it now. But you would think they would take it away.
Well, and what's the old thing? It's really difficult to take away government programs.
But they're not taking away for the current people that are in it. It's just no more new ones.
No more new ones. So, again, you better know how to do a USDA loan. And I don't care if you live in Metro Phoenix. Because remember how Maricopa, you know, right near on Dead Cow Road, Maricopa went from just farm fields to starting to grow.
Yeah.
For near on 10 years, that whole area was USDA eligible.
Right.
And so you could have people doing 100% financing with really good interest rates, or you can have put 10, 15% down and doing a conventional loan. Which would you rather help a customer do?
Oh, the 0% is easier to qualify. Well,
not only that, but now I'd rather save my cash for what you talked about, washers, dryers, refrigerators, making sure that everything else is done.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many people I saw that didn't get offered a USDA loan that should have, because the lender they went to didn't offer it, not because they wouldn't have qualified. So again, it's interesting that self-employed individual, and again, I kind of pontificate some of the things that I see that make me go, why did that guy get told no three times? Wasn't because of him. It wasn't because of his qualifications. It was because of the mortgage professional's qualifications. Isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen mechanics screw up somebody's car, not because the car was screwed up, not because the driver was screwed up, although the driver may have screwed up the car, because the mechanic's qualifications weren't up to the task of doing that?
Too often.
Do you have electric vehicles coming in?
Yes.
I'm assuming
Very limited.
Very limited. Why? Because you've got a 48-volt system in there, and you could kill somebody.
Some of them are 48, some of them are more. Yeah. And there's a lot of things we can do on an electric vehicle, you know, like the door hinge or something. But
the door hinge, got it. Look, so you can check the air pressure on the tire.
We've got the gloves to disconnect the voltage stuff and some of the training to do it, but we're not going to do a ton on that electronic system. But everything else is just a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which again, know your skill set, and if you're going to deny somebody, but you don't have the skill set to figure it out, then know your own limitations and refer them to somebody who, hey, go see this guy, Derek, go see Bill, go see Rose over at Mortgage One, because they know what they're doing with this stuff.
We can work on anything, you know, but sometimes there's a car that comes in like a BMW or something where if we need to take the engine apart or something, yeah, we've got the skill sets to do that, but there's so many specialized tools. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have a history of working on that engine, it may call for 20 hours to take that hit off. We may do it in 30 because we're going to be more meticulous, slower, and easy. We're better off sending it to a guy that does it all the time. And we do that. We would say, look, we can do the car, but I'd rather you take it over to Fred or whatever, which I know has done, you know, dozens of these, and he can get it done more efficiently.
Which, if we're all in it to help each other out, and look, you get paid, you make money doing auto repair.
Right.
I get paid doing mortgages. Yes, we're all, this is our livelihood, but you should be able to help the consumer out, because if you do it right, now that gentleman, what is he going to say about those three other companies that told him no?
He's going to say they didn't treat him well, or they didn't give him all the information he would like to have had.
Yet, had the one local person said, hey, go see Derek, he actually is, he's sure. really good with this. Had he left that taste, the guy could have said, you know what, that guy was honest enough to say, go see Derek, who helped me. That's a much different conversation.
And see, but that's an attitude different with companies. And that's, you start talking about corporate culture and how they work. And you know, ours is one that we're helping people, and we're helping people fix problems. And if that means that we have to send them to another shop that can specialize, we want to be the one that they can trust and know that we'll share that information and let them have that and make sure that they get what they need taken care of. And there's another guy, Joe's Garage, out there on 32nd Street. Very limited in what he does. He doesn't do deep engine. He won't take a head off. He won't take out a transmission. But he has a lot of our business cards. And so he does a great job on what he does do on basic stuff. And he says, oh, no. Here, take this card. Go take it to Chris.
And that's how it should be, is you do what you can
do.
That's
why he has trust.
And you go back down that road, which is why why do we have a local office? Because we want people to come in and sit down and have a conversation. So I've seen Bill sit for hours with people and talk to him. I've seen Rosa there till 8, 9 o'clock at night and emotionally invested in the clients. You know, I do the same thing. It's talking about the person, because unfortunately most people are treated transactionally. How many people, oil changes in your industry, is that just a transaction anymore?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's no big deal to do an oil change.
It's turned into, it's just a commodity. It's a transaction. Yeah. You don't build a relationship with the mechanic anymore. And most mortgage companies treat their customers like a transaction. You're going to do the loan. Cool, we got one. And then you go look for somebody else, as opposed to what I was explaining with that young teacher and his wife. Look, you guys are going to do this if you do it slow, like you're really slow. You're going to do this 4 times over your lifetime. If you do it on the national average, you're going to do this 7, 8 times over your lifetime. Let me help you build some wealth, and let me help you do this the right way. You guys are going to ask me questions before, during, and after the transaction. Wouldn't we rather build that mutual trust and relationship so you know you have that conversation?
Sure.
That's the big thing, is just being able to ask questions. So whether it's the first-time buyer couple that knows everything when they don't, or unfortunately the self-employed individual that was just never offered some of the opportunities that are out there in the marketplace that are not detrimental, they're not awful. There are some really good opportunities for self-employed individuals that would otherwise be told no.
Yeah.
What's the harm in trying to educate yourself? So when I talk again, you know, I do some traveling, we do some speaking. When I talk to other mortgage professionals, look, put the extra 3-4 hours a week into your product knowledge. Know all these guidelines. Because if I know the guidelines, at least I'm willing to say, like you look under a hood, you can go, wow, is that a standard or is that metric? You know, how many mechanics who, shade tree mechanics, have to go get their tools to put it in there to figure out, is that a standard or a metric?
Yeah.
You know that happens. And look, just be able to look under the hood and say, yep, that's standard. Give me that half inch. Or, nope, that's metric. I need that number 12. It's just the same thing with the mortgage industry, where you look at, had another one. If I'm bringing money in from overseas and you are a, you know, you had finances in another country, are typically those banks in dollars?
I do not know. I've not run into that.
Most of them know. So, again, it's...
But they have exchange rates. They know how to change it.
But you have to prove that if you took money out of a foreign account and wired it into your new account here, there's rules on validating and sourcing deposits. Great. So this money came in from an account overseas into an account, and they couldn't figure out how to prove this was real money. Well, number one, go get the bank statements, and you could hire a translator to translate the words that are on there. There's not that many words. It's mostly numbers. Figure out what currency it's in. You can go right to Google and you say, you know, exchange. Google exchange rate of this currency to U.S. dollars on this date. The dum-dums that they were dealing with first couldn't figure out how to validate an exchange. In 5 seconds, you can figure that out. Yep, that's exactly the amount of money that was pulled out in this and moved over into that. And you're good. Why is that so difficult?
Because it's outside their norm.
There's the difference. That's the difference with the cashier who goes, you know what? I will get you those 10 quadruple cheeseburgers, as opposed to, you know, I think there's a better way.
Yeah, a cashier would get fired for that. You know that.
Yeah, but you know what? I know if you had somebody come in that they asked for a whole bunch of repair maintenance and they didn't need it, you would not let them do it.
Of course not.
Okay.
No. And that's going to keep him coming back. You tell a guy he can't have two cheeseburgers, he only needs one, he'll never come back.
Well, that is true, but you would, you know, again, jokingly, but you would do the right thing for the right customer. Yeah. There's people who come in that some of them absolutely don't want to touch the interest rate on their first mortgage, but they need to pull money out because they're drowning. And some of them, you know what? It's the right thing to do to get rid of that interest rate because all of this other stuff is not going to go well, and you don't have the discipline to do what I'm expecting you to do. And other people, no, you've got that 2.75% interest rate. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. We're going to do a HELOC or a HELOAN, and let me explain the differences, and here's how I would do it based on what I see your budgeting prowess, if you will. It's just doing the right loan for the right person, but it's also knowing all of the products out there. And it's amazing how when you call a lot of mortgage companies, can they even do a second mortgage?
I don't know.
Isn't that interesting? So
I would assume they could, but no.
There's some that can. There's some that can't. There's some that have to broker things out in ways that make it less advantageous for a customer. So again, there's varying degrees of does that mortgage professional want to do another home loan and they have to do something so they get their paycheck so they can make a car payment, or do they do the right thing for the customer? So, you know, again, all of that, I'm going to say we're blessed. We get to do all this stuff here in Yuma County for the United States, and we get to live in the greatest country on earth at the greatest time in history, and we get to have these conversations on air. Why, Russ?
Because the military makes sure that we stay free and safe and protect us and all that stuff.
We have men and women who, and again, as a mortgage professional, they're willing to take a bullet for $30,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And again, when you have that much commitment to this country and our culture, you know what? If there's anything we can ever do for them, I know your son is in the military. You've had family members.
Well, he's in the Air Force. Some people call that military.
What? That's military. that was Russ Clark that said that. But again, thank you so very much for your service. We appreciate it. And I will say, have a wonderful and safe weekend. Stay safe, everyone. Bye for now. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.
This is Derek Eggerberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace, offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we understand that retirement is a journey. Our team is dedicated to helping you retire with confidence, providing personalized strategies tailored to your unique needs. Whether you're just starting to plan or nearing retirement, we're here to ensure your financial future is secure. Investment advisor services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.